titled the
yeah,
Metaphysics and Other Vices.
I'm actually almost nervous about this episode. I shouldn't be, but
I am too.
You are, okay.
It's gonna be interesting.
Ah, metaphysics is so tough, man. Especially, we'll get into it, but
I've got notes. I read back through.
Connecting it to the narratives is hard. I mean, it's there.
It's definitely there.
We can do it.
The desire to know is the biggest kernel I found.
I like that in your notes. That was definitely.
That's the first sentence in the book, and I'm like, oh, well, that explains why we're literally scrabbling around in the dark, making arbitrary categories and calling them the causes for some strange reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The causes and the accidents and all that.
What was this, a thingamabar? A thingamadude? I'd have to figure out how to use this.
Decorker, I think?
Is that the thing?
You don't adjust anything. You simply place it over the bottle.
And go like so?
Yeah.
Literally.
And squeeze the handle. Yep. And go like so. And pull right back up.
This is so...
Isn't that great?
What in the world?
Yeah, that's the best wine opener I've ever seen.
Been living in a world of...
Actually, I won that in a nerd competition.
Okay, why were we not recording?
We are.
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, for those who don't know, I just opened a wine bottle with this amazing device that is impossible to really describe.
Oh, and then you just grab it again and pull out, and the cork comes off. No, not the cork.
Oh.
You literally repeat the process.
Just...
Yeah, and it pulls the cork off. No, all the way.
All the way.
Pull the handle. There it is.
Oh, my word.
Isn't that great?
So, guys, I've been living in a world of darkness. I've been stumbling around until I discovered the metaphysics of this wine opener. I don't think that's what that is.
No, it's not. Just physics. Just physics will confuse everyone.
Well, folks, I will say the reason it's titled Metaphysics and Other Vices today is because it's difficult to really talk about metaphysics today. I mean, the first question I'll ask Jacob, my good fellow co-host.
Yes.
Why do you think there are no metaphysics departments in our universities? We have physics departments.
Wow.
We still have things, you know, pulled over from the Aristotelian times, but we don't have the somebody named Albertus Magnus from the metaphysics department of UCLA.
Yeah. The short answer is it's a subfield of physics, and I think that's probably the fairest answer. Now, I'm sorry, not physics. It's a subfield of philosophy. That's the short answer. It's a subfield of philosophy. And when you say that, then, you know, how do you define metaphysics? I think it's the natural next answer. Which slice of the pie is it?
Yeah.
Why don't you venture a guess?
Well, the only thing I've got so far is Aristotle's first sentence. That's, those of you might have read in the show notes. He says, quote, humans by nature desire to know.
Yeah.
Unquote. And that's interesting because we have these physical things that we're looking at. And if you're an empiricist, you say, that's all there is. And, you know, it's easy for me to kind of fall into that same vein of thought because I look at all these physical things. And things that to them back then seemed metaphysical, like fire, air.
See, that is part of the problem.
Earth. They looked at that and says, oh, here we go, metaphysics.
Yeah.
But we know today, after modern science has been on the rule for a good long time, that those are not metaphysical things. But still,
we kind of need an extended introduction to this topic of metaphysics, and it at least has two components. Number one, why we're here. And in other words, where we've been and how we've gotten to where we are.
No.
And then number two, what in the world is the point and how can we actually approach this topic of metaphysics?
Yeah.
So would you like to address either of those?
I will say that the point is somewhat lost on me. I mean,
okay.
There's a quote that I should read here. Let me see. Quote from Aristotle's Metaphysics. Not to disrespect the aged philosopher long dead, but... Well then, those who at the very start latched on to this methodical inquiry and said that the underlying subject was one had no misgivings about this. But some of those who said that it was one, as if defeated by this inquiry, said that the one, that is, nature as a whole is immovable, not only as regards to coming to be, but also to passing away. Well, what in the world does that mean?
Yeah.
Nature is immovable?
He's talking about, well, I think at least he's talking about being there.
That
the
was
existence.
One thing that was helpful, because that is somewhat inoculated into me, or imbued in me, with the Heidegger train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Being and not being is something that the Germans were able to give us some context for.
Yeah.
Somewhat recently.
Have you read Spinoza at all? I know we haven't in the book club. Okay, well, that's another topic for another time then. Yeah, there's a number of philosophers out there who have delved into this, and it's not for the faint of heart on the technical side, I'll say that. There, in fact, if you just search one of the topics we'll be talking about today, you'll find, let's see, the univocity of being is what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
You'll find such a chasm in the explanations. So there's effectively the 10-minute school rote answer sort of answers that you'll find. And then there's the, you know, hour-long plus lectures that cover a fragment or a small section of the thought concerning the univocity of being. And those hour-long ones are often extremely difficult to approach from a layperson's perspective because the topics, the ideas that they're using simply don't naturally occur in our minds. So that's kind of what I was getting at when saying we need a longer introduction to kind of buffer ourselves into metaphysics. Basically, it's something that we certainly can think about, we certainly can get there, but it's not something that even I naturally consider. And I consider myself to be more of a natural philosopher.
Yeah.
Than maybe even anyone else in the group that of positive perspectives. So
what I will say is that
yeah.
Right away what I picked up on from rereading Aristotle's Metaphysics is that he does not agree with the idea of the univocity of being.
Yeah,
he doesn't agree with a lot of people.
Later.
Yeah, which he does mention univocity, which I'm assuming is the same as a oneness
uh-huh.
to the first cause.
Yes.
And you know, it's so weird because to describe some of these things, I'm taking over and appropriating some of Aquinas' terminology.
Exactly.
Because Aquinas, for me, helps us categorize this in a way that is somewhat more understandable.
Yeah.
While still staunchly standing in his Aristotelian thought.
Yeah.
But perhaps you should, either you can start with Duns Scotus, or I can
okay.
start with some of the stuff that Aristotle goes through.
Yeah, so we are talking about Duns Scotus and Aristotle primarily this week, since those are the two thinkers related to metaphysics who we approached in our book club. Duns Scotus really provided a contribution of, well, it was widely accepted after him, as the students of him and those in the philosophical fields actually accepted univocity of being post-Duns Scotus, whereas before, like you were mentioning with Aristotle and whatnot, it was very questionable.
Yeah, if Aristotle questions it, people are going to
yeah.
begin to question it en masse.
So Aristotle actually, he refers to this substance as sort of a prime matter, and well, we'll get into that a little bit more, I'm sure, when we talk about Aristotle. But anyways, from my perspective, if there is a prime matter, Aristotle actually did believe in univocity of a being, in a sense, since all things consist of the prime matter. That is a univocity.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, while he did kind of talk around it, and I'm not completely read up on his opinions on it, my sort of straightforward approach to Aristotle's belief is that he semantically, or let's say, in practice, believed in a sort of univocity, since he talked about prime matter so much as being prime.
Yeah. What's so interesting is when you look at the different names we have for schools of philosophy today,
yeah.
everything seems to have been espoused at one point in the past. Aristotle goes down the hill
oh, absolutely, yeah.
of all these beliefs. So I'll just walk through.
Well, actually, hold on. I'm realizing I'm doing one of the things I didn't want to do, which is use terms such as univocity without buffering them substantially with explanations.
Well, let's do that.
So yeah, let's start. Like I said, it was a sort of a Duns Scotus championed idea. If you don't know who that is, 15th century scholastic. Yeah, that's an accurate categorization, I think. So in the church, of course,
given that scholastics, you know, that's what they were in the church. So much of his thought actually has to do with theology, and he is considered blessed by the Catholic Church to this day for his contributions to...
Blessed Scotus.
Yes, to theology. So, with that preface, univocity effectively means oneness, and so, or a singularity or something along those lines. Well, that word has different meanings. And when we add of being to it, we mean that there is a singular essence from which all beings are comprised. And so you might think about this in particular, and everyone does, in particular in relation to the being of God. Like I mentioned, he was within the church, and so this was a very substantial consideration for him. And even if you go back to Aristotle's metaphysics, that was also a serious consideration. What is the essence of, you know, deity behind it all? And so...
Already some difficulties are coming to mind for me.
Absolutely.
And this will help, I think, in us buffering this idea, because you mentioned the word essence.
Yeah.
What in the world is that? Because, again, I'm very much in the artist's world of things, the world of sense.
Right.
All of the five senses.
And this is great, because we basically, in order to get into the mindset of metaphysics, have to practice talking in metaphysical terms in order to get there. Again, you know, I consider myself to be at least philosophically minded, and yet when I approach metaphysics after just, you know, let's say a few months off of not thinking about it in everyday life.
It's like lifting 200-pound weight that you haven't done in a while.
Yeah, exactly. My muscle atrophy in relation to metaphysics isn't very, very fast. So,
what is this essence?
This is good. Essence, I more or less chose it intentionally because it's not in the normal lists of substances or causes.
There's a couple other words there.
Yes.
Substances, causes.
In Duns Scotus formulation. So, we'll get there.
Of course.
So, however, I used it in kind of a non-technical sense. So what I mean by that is, metaphysically speaking, essence isn't a thing. I was just using the colloquial sense in saying, you know, what comprises things.
Absolutely.
The essence of things, we could otherwise say.
So when he says the essence of things, he means...
The substance of things in his language, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The substance of things, what makes up stuff.
Yes. And we have to be careful here, because as soon as you add the word metaphysic or metaphysical before something, which is what we do when we're talking in metaphysical terms, it just takes on this other dimensional quality. It's not... physics. It's not finite. It's not,
well,
you know, we could say...
What's the difference between substance and matter? Because we know matter is a physical thing, at least in my estimation.
In the atomic sense, you know, it's a physical thing. And that's it's partly to answer your original question, why is there not metaphysics as a field or a department at colleges? And the reason is because both physics and philosophy have leached away from it substantially enough.
And they cover it.
And they, yeah, and so that's that. So yes, there are aspects of proper physics, Newtonian, atomic, even quantum, when we're talking about substances and whatnot. However, strictly speaking, there's no sense of that in the metaphysical analysis. So when we talk about metaphysics, we're talking about this other dimensional quality of things. In fact, the word metaphysics might shed some light here. Meta... that's tricky, because it has a bunch of meanings in the current day. We could use it to say beyond physics. We could also use it to say before physics.
Behind physics.
Yes. And I've read recently that there were quite the debates on what Aristotle's meaning of metaphysics was in that day. And really, if I recall correctly, it wasn't exactly his precise term anyways. Do you remember the book title for metaphysics? You might have read this as well.
I believe it was just simply Metaphysics by Aristotle. And then
if I remember correctly, it was actually like his scribe who added that title.
Let's look at the title, because I've got it right here.
I'm sure it's the title of his book, but it's his actual first words in the book.
His very first words, humans by nature desire to know.
Okay.
are his very first words. But let's go back to the very beginning here, because it's in here.
The translation may or may not have the note, which
is
okay.
A question came to mind on this same train of thought.
Yeah.
How has the discovery of atomical matter not rendered thinking and considerations of metaphysics obsolete? How is it that we can say that metaphysics is still of any use when we have scientists who are able to study matter and discuss it down to the very depth?
In a practical sense, I'm afraid that certainly some substantial qualities from metaphysics have been subtracted.
Okay.
I will not say all of them. I think that there are certainly philosophical gains to be had, let's say, part of the story that we'd be missing out on if we didn't talk about metaphysics.
Yeah, that's something that definitely came to mind, is that almost our discussion today, while we will discuss the minutiae of metaphysics to some degree, it seems that the meta behind the meta of physics is even more important, because why are we searching out the cosmos in such depth?
Yeah, and it's like what Aristotle says there. We want to know. We want to know what's behind. We want to know the reasons. The not just the what's, but the how's even, you know?
And, you know, to be easier on metaphysics as a thing, when you look at matter, the arguments of Aquinas still hold true. It still appears that there should be a cause for matter itself.
Yeah.
A kind of being before being.
Right.
Almost. But whatever that metaphysics is almost like a science that has never been invented and cannot be invented.
Yeah, because it's not precisely in accordance with our physical reality, if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the idea of coming up with a metaphysics, but I guess today we simply call that theology.
We sort of do. Certainly theology, maybe I can add to my list of things that leech away from metaphysics, is one of those topics, because we tend to talk about the essences, the qualities of deity in the theological fields, more than the philosophical ones now, even though metaphysics traditionally would have been a sort of pre-philosophy field. So, all right.
Down to business.
Let's get into it, right? We've beaten around the bush. We're starting to practice talking about metaphysics. Where would you begin in a introductory course to the idea of metaphysics?
I would go with Aristotle's description. He says, quote, "This craft is the science of starting points and causes," and of course the "this" that I put at the beginning of that sentence is not his, but that's what he meant. "This craft is the starting point, the science of starting points and causes," and that's interesting, because the idea that something is caused by another thing, there's also the idea there that for the sake of which something is done. So you can talk about actions and movements, or you can talk about beings.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I was going to get at. From Duns Scotus' sort of definition, he's very careful to not include concepts as something that's actually in the field of metaphysics. Concepts are out. Like, we can't just talk about ethereal, meaningless concepts. We
like
have to
the
talk
higher
about
forms.
Yeah, that's a concept.
Okay.
We have to talk about being. We could even talk about groups of beings. But in some sense, it's not just a concept. Scotus very adamantly affirmed it was related to existence or being of things.
Okay.
When we talk about metaphysics.
So, something that was always confusing to me about reading Scotus was he would make these categories.
Yes.
Why was he making categories of any kind?
Well, I'm sure you saw in Aristotle's Metaphysics as well, there were many categories.
There were.
And it's whenever I start to approach this, I have to pump the brakes, because in a real sense, we can't understand in the English language what they were talking about.
Sure.
And it's very difficult to even linguistically go back to their day and time and understand in the original languages. You know, needing to learn a language is pretty high up on that list of difficulties. So, these categories are what they imagined
were are adequate descriptions of being.
Okay.
And so this is the real, in a real sense, these are metaphysical categories. So they imagined these metaphysical categories as what comprised being.
So odd, even, could be a category.
Theoretically, yeah.
I believe I saw that in the Pythagorean formation.
Yes.
Which, granted, we're on Aristotle's hit list and probably on Duns Scotus as well, but also limited and unlimited were categories.
These are good starting points because they're easy to conceive of, and yet at the same time, they're easy to say, well, it seems like, or logically speaking, odd and even wouldn't be something that actually was a component of existence, of existing material or being.
Yeah.
Right?
So
that's where we start to weed out the categories.
Okay.
What these metaphysicians did was attempted to create a coherent set of metaphysical categories which properly or fully defined physical reality.
Interesting. Okay. So what would be a category that would actually stand to itself from a metaphysician's viewpoint that is not having to do with a physical reality, but merely comments on the nature of the physical reality?
Okay. I guess I'll just start talking about Scotus's categories. There were 10, as I noted in my book club lecture, which, by the way...
that was a good lecture.
It was short, my part was. I listened to the entirety. It was about 2 hours. I highly recommend that for anyone. You can just look up Duns Scotus and Aristotle, Positive Perspectives Book Club, and find that on various publication sources. That will go much further into, or maybe we'll get further today, I don't know.
I'm going to try.
But that is a good conversation. It's very approachable when it comes to metaphysics, Aristotle and Duns Scotus especially. So his fields, the first one was substances. Now, this actually is the finite thing, which is kind of what you were saying. You know, you were saying, let's get to one that's more abstract,
beyond
physical, just the physical.
Beyond matter, almost.
However, we start with substances because it is a singular field. It's in its own category. It is the material that must be in order to comprise physical matter.
Material that makes material.
Yes. And so, in the modern sense, we could actually view this as the subatomic sets. We could view this in physics terms.
Okay.
So, to actually get to the more metaphysical fields, although this one is technically metaphysical and necessary.
It begins to feel metaphysical. I mean, that's the thing about some physics. We think back to Stevens' unified line.
Yeah.
When you divide things in that way, you eventually get to a point where stuff begins to feel almost spiritual.
Yeah. Everyone's gotten that spooky feeling when they're studying quantum mechanics.
Higgs boson.
Not to say there's anything to that, but anyways. So the first of his accidents, well, all the other 9 qualities are called accidents because they are emergent from the being.
That's a really good word to describe that, emergent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know we had some difficulty with the word in our book club meeting. When it comes down to it, emergent is probably the closest good translated word that we have.
Out of substance, in a way.
In effect, they're not effectual. They're not the causes. They're just merely springing forth from and associated with and defined parts of the being that's in question. So we call them accidents. It's an older use of that word to get closer to our definition.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard that in a pseudo-philosophical discussion back in college is like, accidents?
Yeah.
Was that how Aquinas died? What in the world?
So, you know, forgive us if we do use that term. You can think emergent or something closer to that.
That's
to help. So anyways, the first of these, which there are 9, would be quantity. And so whenever you have something that you want to consider as being, you can quantify it. Well, not necessarily whenever. I have to pause myself there. One of the modifications I make to Scotus's formulation, metaphysical formulation, is to say that some attributes may be unknowable and or even null. Those attributes might not have a value. We could think of it numerically as them being a zero value or even a null value in certain instances. And
some of them in some effect be a concept and therefore out of the question in this discussion.
See, that's the thing. Theoretically, none of these are actually conceptual. These are metaphysical categories,
yeah,
which are related to being.
Absolutely, quantity, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you can
Now,
that.
Now, colloquially speaking, of course, these are concepts. However, it's kind of a fine line because I have to say what SCOTUS said, and
oh, yeah,
some of it is difficult, you know, just
in
modern language.
Speak.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes
sense. So hopefully, you know, you're following along and not being like, well, it's a concept, you know, even though I said it's
but
not a concept.
But some value is null, as you were saying.
Yes, so some of these actually may be null in relation to being. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Hopefully that answered,
well, I
you
will
know.
Say, how does he define not being? Does he do any sort of definition of that? I will say that was one of the groups of people,
yeah,
on Aristotle's hit list. One of the things he asserted was that there is no such thing
as not being. Yeah, I know Aristotle's view on that more than I know SCOTUS' view on not being. My guess is to say he probably just followed Aristotle's approach on that one.
Yeah, if he doesn't talk about it, then that's...
It's pretty much the default at that. I mean,
yeah,
as far as I know, metaphysically speaking, not being is not a thing. So
yeah,
you know, it's like, I mean, that's almost a tautology. So, yeah, not being, it's not even interesting when it comes down to it. So anyways, we'll move on.
Other categories.
Yeah.
We have quantity as one of the accidents,
sure,
of substance.
We could have quality, relation, action, passion, place, time, position, and state. So that's the full list. And in my book club, I asked an important question. Can we make a different list of these metaphysical things, metaphysical qualities, in order to comprise a being? Or we could say, can we add or remove from this list and still have a fully described being?
And this gets into univocity, because something that came to my mind today is, are all of these accidents able to be summarized into just one word?
Yeah.
Because if the nature of being is
singular,
maybe that's possible, or there just isn't a word for that in language.
It's really interesting that you bring that up, because effectively, in SCOTUS' position, univocity was actually emergent from there being only one substance from which all these accidents emerge. The accidents are not part of the substance, which is the singular essence of being.
Okay.
To use
okay.
my previous word. So do you see?
So we have to have...
So they're
words.
They're emergent descriptions, not... actual substance. Sure. They're not actual substances of being. There's only one substance, and that is that's how he gets to univocity of being. There being
okay.
that singular substance.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and read some Aristotelian retorts towards univocity and see if
Very
we can
good.
Have a fight here. All right, so, quote, "Those thinkers, then, who posit that the universe is one and also posit a single nature as matter, and this corporeal and having magnitude, clearly err in many ways, for they posit the elements of bodies alone, but not of the incorporeal things, although incorporeal ones are also beings." Now, that, I guess, would be the question. We now have some more words to help lend some light on this corporeal and incorporeal.
Yeah, that's a really good segue too, because when we say substances in the Duns Scotus sense as being that singular material being, he actually still says even these incorporeal beings are comprised of substances. They're just not corporeal substances. So that this is where, well, yeah, that's the general Scotus answer to that Aristotle.
Mm. Because it looks like
statement.
Maybe synonymous with accidents is, in Aristotle's speak, elements of bodies alone. And he's positing that these people are positing only the elements, and they're not actually getting at the being, the body itself.
Yeah.
So in a metaphysical sense, what is a body?
Right.
How does that relate to substance?
I'm glad you asked this. because I actually have no idea. And this is one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, and maybe why metaphysics is less important than it used to be. Mm-hmm. On a personal philosophical standpoint, I really don't understand how you can accurately or properly divide or discreetly define what bodies are, what a singular being thing is.
Yeah, I mean, you could just say a thing.
And so that's the problem. Aristotle was very specific, or really back to Plato in this case, was very specific to say the chair is a thing. It is a being. The chair has being. It's a, in the Platonic sense, a image or a, you know, physical thing of the perfect concept of a chair. So...
Is there a way that we could divide the chair's being...
That's what I'm getting
infinitely
at.
...infinitely today?
Yeah.
...into atom after atom after subatomic particle?
That's exactly what I'm getting towards. So if we say that, then what about the atoms that comprise that chair? That's the question. Are those also individual beings?
Oh, man.
You know? And if that's the case, are they perfect... Are, you know, because the thing with atoms is they really are quite uniform. You know, respective to their own types.
I thought of a word to describe metaphysics for our audience that would help them laugh at all of this, but it would make us have to put an E after our discussion.
Oh, dear.
And we would like to be appealing to all people from all walks of life. So let's also get another retort.
All right.
That Aristotle says against Univocity. Quote, "Further, they err by not positing the substance, that is, the whatness, as a cause of anything." So, you know, the English word for that is quiddity.
Yeah.
Whatness. They don't give you the whatness of the substance. They just delineate all of these accidents.
There's some substance, yeah, and then there's accidents. Yeah, no, this is good. He's effectively pointing out that they're not philosophically sound in their descriptions. You know, they're not based on good logic, really. And I don't have a retort for this one. I don't even think that Duns Scotus 10 substances are necessary, or not 10 substances, 10 metaphysical qualities are based on anything like solid. They're difficult to rebut, and that's why I took the approach I did in the book club of trying to pose these simple questions. Can we consider a different set of substances? And again, for the listeners, I challenge you, you know, take a good, I don't know, half hour or so, write this list out.
See what you can do.
Absolutely. Write the list out. See what you can do. See if you can combine them. And then think about the one easy way to evaluate this is consider cases. Consider edge cases, even, where these qualities apply or some may combine, and see if you can find a better list. Because when it comes down to it, I don't think there's anything magical about this list, and I think that's what Aristotle's really pointing out here. It's not really a logical set of things.
But can we really come up with more?
And that's the thing.
Is it really possible? I mean, I don't think we did.
Aristotle came up with a whole different list himself, and I don't think his is philosophically sound either, so I don't know where he gets off on, you know, saying what he says there.
That's probably why you have this Heraclitean view, and also the Platonic view, that everything is so much in flux in being itself. Like, think how much the human race, if you want to take that as a category.
Yeah, a category of being.
The human race is a category. The amount of flux that's happened in the human race, the ways we describe things, it's impossible to really hold on to something for a long time. So when I read this, I look at it and I say, wow, these people were treating this with the portent and moment and weight that we would treat our science departments today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we look back on it, it's kind of like, whoops. But what's interesting is getting to that point that you you defined as not being able to really speak for substance.
Yeah.
And the way Aristotle described it as not being able to speak for something whatness. There were some approaches to that before Aristotle and Plato that I think would bear on our conversation. You have some people who believe that all of these specific things that we now know to be physical made up the substance. So we had, I believe, Thales and a few others that believe fire, air, earth, or water. Some of them would claim only fire. I believe Heraclitus claimed fire. And the Greek word for that is eidos.
Yeah.
So
I've heard of these views.
Material things, the eidos, make up the substance. And then we get into another thing that's metaphysical in nature. Someone, I forget the name of it, said eros made up the metaphysical substance that gave off all of these accidents.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
How do you even make that claim? I mean, there's no
scientific
way to make that claim. You're just arbitrarily proclaiming things at that point. But
yeah.
Maybe there's more to it.
I'm sure others have claimed logos. Logos is right there as one of those qualities that undergirds all things. So
yeah. And, you know, some people might claim that when we say that, we're committing a kind of deus ex machina sin, coming up with this category arbitrarily to speak for the oneness of things.
Yeah.
But it's still an arbitrary thing. Like, think of a novel's plot device, which is typically where this terminology is used.
Yeah.
You come up with a plot device that is just there to magically make the situation make sense.
Right. Well, one other thing right here in the conversation to point out is that SCOTUS did kind of buffer his own categories by saying human language fails to describe what we're trying to talk about here. And even though we are just trying to talk about what's behind physical things and existence in general, human language hits this wall where we can only do our best. And his attempt at doing his best was, of course, defining the 10 categories that he did and saying, this is as much sense as I can make out of it. You know, hopefully this helps for you too, basically.
Yeah, something that was really intriguing. I know that we left off concepts, but one group that liked concepts and decided to give them mathematical value was the Pythagoreans.
Absolutely.
They gave numbers for love, justice, and other qualities. And they talk about categories and all of this other stuff that we know today has to do with eidos. But we've talked a lot about these categories.
Mm-hmm.
In what sense can we talk about a cause? We've talked about a lot of accidents. In what sense can we talk about a cause for these things? This is where I get into the weeds with Aquinas.
Yeah.
Because I think Aquinas helped us extrapolate this way better.
Yeah.
That for the sake of which, did Duns Scotus speak to that of any kind?
See, again, I believe he kind of just defaulted to the Catholic Church sort of answer in those 1500s. So, I don't... Either it wasn't interesting enough because it was just the Catholic Church answer for me to delve into, or I might have just missed it. So I don't really think so, though. In general, he didn't really go there. He was mostly concerned with the univocity of being. Other concepts like the Immaculate Conception, again, in theological terms, were majorly contributed by him. That for the sake of which, I'm not so sure.
That's
so,
an Aristotelian concept, and I can talk about that. The
elaborate on that.
There was that is the reason for which something is done or for which something exists.
Yeah.
And you take that, let's think of an example there. So typically you learn watercraft so that you don't drown. There's a reason why you're doing that. You don't want to swim everywhere.
Yeah.
That's a really simple way to extrapolate that. But the way I think about it, Duns Scotus is almost more of an advanced view of metaphysics than Aristotle is, because he's using more powers of language to describe it. But we've gotten into the weeds here. This is a mind you know what. Why do we talk about metaphysics?
We talk about it because we would like to, well, at least as those who are open to the concept of there being things beyond physics, that there being any sort of thing outside of our explainable physical models, we have to have category of metaphysics in order to do so. So this is really where it connects back to our previous conversations, where we've talked about things like the ontological argument and such. I've brought into play, well, what transcendent quality can you conceive of? Or do you actually believe that there is any sort of metaphysical or transcendent truth or other topics like that?
Mm.
And so as soon as we say that, we're delving right into metaphysics, whether we call it that or not. And so, you know how I said earlier, it's been leached from in all these various directions? I still think there's value there, because I do still think that there is something beyond the physical realm. And so we need these metaphysical concepts and tools. I think Duns Scotus' formulation, albeit a good one, is not adequate for the modern day. What it does for us is leaves us a sort of partially filled out essay. It's not quite a blank page, because it effectively gives us the introduction to how we can, in the current day, with our current understandings, talk about these things that are beyond the physical realm.
What's interesting is when people in newspapers especially make proclamations of a moral nature,
yep.
In a sense, they are making a metaphysical claim.
They could be. It kind of depends on the basis for those, that the morality. You know, they could be thinking of the basis for their moral statements as, you know, purely cultural in the current day.
I mean, that's the thing. You could view morality as a purely physical eidos kind of thing. I mean, Nietzsche did a lot of work
exactly
to build that direction in his book, The Genealogy of Morals.
Mm-hmm.
Morals have proceeded down to us through the ages from specific people groups, specific influences, perhaps even evolution to a degree. But when you think about it from the evolutionary perspective, then things really can become physical.
Yeah.
Again.
They do.
And then the question becomes yet again, how do we get beyond the physical? If morality can't do it, the only thing I see left is religion as the answer to a metaphysical quandary.
Well, I will tack on to that philosophy and cite our last few episodes as evidence for that.
Yeah.
In our discussions of these things, we've bordered the unapproachable. We've run right up against the theological topics. And
that was something I was going to bring up too. Is,
and we got there from philosophy, as far as I know, as far as I can tell.
What gets you over that chasm?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Does anybody ever not approach that chasm? I guess is the first question that's tacked onto this. And two, when you approach that chasm, what devices can people use to get beyond that?
It's interesting, because I really think crossing the border is harder than existing over the border. And this is another reason why I think metaphysics is denigrated in the modern day. Metaphysics lives across the border. But when we tried to approach it from our side of that border, we couldn't cross over it from that direction. And yet, we can talk about metaphysics all day. It's just tenuously connected to reality. Like we pointed out, the logical connections just aren't quite there. Like Scotus pointed out, language fails in these matters. So I think that's the real answer. It's like we can go there, but not necessarily stay connected to where we are.
Well, the big quandary that comes to mind is that if 99.9% of all the things we are interacting with seem to be merely physical, then at that point, the that for the sake of which becomes more and more and more blurred, like a camera that's struggling to come into focus. The reason for doing things gets increasingly grounded for a physical purpose.
Yeah.
Some people are comfortable with that. Some people are okay with having a physical reason for everything they're doing, and that's it. They live from cradle to grave with that. More of what I was getting at in that question is, what shift has to happen in human thinking to get people in a place where they can exist over the border?
Gotcha.
Is there any such thing in your estimation?
That's a good question. I go back to my original answer of saying, in order to think metaphysically, you have to talk about it. You have to practice it. And it's a different context for that answer, but I think that's what it comes down to.
Where's the place for faith in this? Could faith be one of these tools?
Absolutely.
To vault over that, although it's probably an artificial vault.
And that's trickery, because we could say we have faith that Duns Scotus categories exist, and that would be a real application of faith. In the more Christian sense, we could say something like, we have faith in God. Well, the tenuous connection is still tenuous. Like, it's not... Maybe I'm missing your question.
No,
but,
because I think you're illustrating it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if people are going to keep on postulating through these physical things with clear reasoning, they're going to get to a point where they have to make a decision of faith, I would argue. The metaphysical... Not, pardon me. the claim that evolution and scientific thinking gives one an adequate exposition of life.
Yeah, okay.
That is a metaphysical claim. To claim that whatever it is you have spent your life doing and extrapolating upon gives an adequate whatness to your existence, that to me seems to be a metaphysical claim that you have to choose to believe.
I
that
see.
Belief also being a metaphysical thing. Like,
yeah.
Belief, could that be another category? That's, or is that just a concept? I guess that's just a concept.
It's more of a mental concept, unfortunately.
No.
But, no, you certainly rise to a good point. Whenever you want to think about, whenever you want to be okay with the whatness, like you said, of existence, of being, you do cross over into that metaphysical realm. You have to. You have to reach across, find that metaphysical concept that you're okay with, and take it on by faith. I think that that's
that's
clearest
really
way of saying what you're
certain.
Getting at there, yeah.
And, you know, that is one thing I've thought about. Will the human race, if we continue proceeding forward and improving economically, improving the structures of our societies, will we eventually, as a race, get to a crisis point that right now it only seems thoughtful individuals are able to get to? Will there eventually be enough thoughtful individuals that the human race as a whole can get to that crisis point?
When it comes to anything across the metaphysical boundary, I don't think so.
Hmm.
Now, my reason for saying that is I don't think historically it's been the case. Even in the days, in the cultures where the church was dominant, everything and anything and everything replaced metaphysical belief, faith. As much as possible, it was replaced. From a church history standpoint, I could talk on and on about how that occurred. So, you know, there's the historical precedent. There's also, I think, the mental precedent. While we might want those answers, finding them is another story. You arrive at the Nietzschean sort of conclusion, I think, much more easily than you arrive at other conclusions.
Because again, the physical
just
things
based on
seem
human
to
nature.
Tell the story.
Exactly. You're because the physical things seem to require less faith, you're going to accept them. Now, I don't think they do require, you know, quote unquote, less
because
faith.
Anybody can interpret the physical things a number of ways.
Yeah.
Quantity, quality, place, position. I can make an infinite amount of proclamations arbitrarily about what any given thing's position is.
Yeah.
Or what any given thing's state is. Now, yes, there is a scientific physical sense where water is in different states, I guess.
Yeah.
In between its evaporated or liquid states. But in some cases, I'm just making a proclamation that something is what it is.
And you can see that very clearly when you start talking about people. It's very arbitrary what these categories take on of, you know, passion and action and those sorts of things.
And that's what's really interesting. His accidents begin to get into concepts when he says something like passion.
I think so, too. Yeah. And again, this goes back to the worldview that they had and the lack of developed science that they had in their day. We didn't have reasonable understanding that could lead to a sort of physiological reason for human actions. In the modern day, this is something we definitely need to talk about. You can make the claim humans are complex biological machines and therefore deterministic. And so because of that, again, metaphysical qualities underneath the substance seem to be less necessary.
But again, they're making a proclamation.
It is a
in
proclamation,
itself
yes.
Is a religious sort of claim,
uh-huh.
Interpreting the data. I mean, because obviously there are sciences that look at the machinery of man,
yeah.
And then say something else that he's not deterministic. I wouldn't say every scientist believes in a deterministic man.
Yeah. Yeah, the complexities, especially of humans, are extremely deep. And when we start talking about these topics like we are, the univocity of being, the soul, related things, we see things that are maybe even evidences that the human body is not merely a biological machine. Now, it's tricky because, again, like you said, it's interpretations of the data that get you there. And so, again, I'm not going to say that we have a ladder to go across the metaphysical divide and, you know, do something not by faith.
So is it possible from a metaphysical...
But that door is open, is what I'm getting at.
A metaphysician would say that the human body is a collection of accidents emergent from the substance that is the soul. Is that a thing you could say as a metaphysician?
Yes, actually, that's a good way of saying it. There were various views. Some of them actually did pose exactly what you posed. SCOTUS didn't accept that, particularly because he said, well, look, the body is still there after the soul leaves. After you die, your body is still there. It's in roughly the same state. It's maybe degrading at that point. But it's not like it's literally emergent from a immaterial soul.
So this is interesting. All of these people posit that there is a substance.
Yes. A prime substance. A
prime,
prime
matter, as Aristotle would say. Why did that have to exist? I don't think they had any way of proving.
Yeah.
In our scientific word language. I mean, they wouldn't have had that language. That's Baconian, Dewey language. They had no way of proving that, but they also believe that it was a foregone conclusion that it had to exist for these accidents to be accidental. So why substances? Why'd there have to be a substance?
It's clean. It's aesthetically pleasing. That's at least part of it. When we consider, if you were to not have training in these fields of physics and metaphysics and philosophy, and you sat down and you thought about what sort of tools, concepts may be necessary to conceive of fundamental matter, and you looked at the wide array of presentations that matter afforded you, you would basically be caught in one of various traps. You could go back pre-Aristotle, like you were saying, and say, oh, there's fire, or fire and air and, you know, water and whatever else. Or you could say, no, there's something beneath all of it. And it's just simply attractive to us to say that there is something beneath all of it from which various, let's say, combinations of which create or, let's say, emerge all other things.
What's interesting about this is while the metaphysical conception has changed, the drive behind the conception building process still exists today.
Yeah.
When you call something a, quote, God particle, and you spend countless billions of dollars building machinery to get it to show itself.
Yeah.
And you look for it as much as possible. How are these people not doing the same thing? But with their limited tools, they're doing the things that humans have been doing for thousands of years.
Absolutely. That's an accurate parallel, I think. You know, if Aristotle could have done what modern physicists do, he would have been very pleased to do so. Like, I have no qualms saying that. I think
Absolutely.
That's really true. When it, like he said, we want to know what's behind things. We want to understand.
And we're going to keep looking, and we believe that narratives might be one of the closest answers so far.
Certainly, it is a tool by which we can learn and hopefully teach and really imbibe this, these concepts, to the extent that they are useful in our everyday life, to the extent that which we can understand them and integrate them into our thinking.
Absolutely. Well, folks, this has been the Narratives in Philosophy podcast with your daily dose of attempts to describe the indescribable. This has been Metaphysics and Other Vices, which I believe are very apparent
Yes.
in my train of questioning. Signing off.